Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Irina Lagunina, Director of Special Projects at RFERL's Russian Service. Irina, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting, Steve.
All right. Well, one thing we're not planning to talk about, but I just thought I'd mention because it just happened several minutes ago, is that a Russian court has convicted American Paul Whelan of espionage and sentenced him to 16 years in prison, which is about close to the maximum. I think the maximum was 18 years, or that's what the prosecutors were calling for. It's obviously a huge case. Paul Whelan has been in jail in Lefortovo, I believe, for quite some time, since December 2018, I think. And he held up a sign saying it was a sham trial, among other things. The U.S. ambassador has said and said again ahead of the trial that there, or ahead of the verdict and sentence, that there's no evidence against there's no evidence of Paul Whelan's guilt. So this is obviously something that's going to be part of the story of relations between Russia and the United States, and of course the issue of justice in Russia. But anyway, I'd like to get on with talking about what we're discussing today, which is over the weekend, President Vladimir Putin made some comments about a range of issues in remarks on a TV show. I'd like to hear some of your thoughts, Irina, about what he said, and I guess kind of how it relates to reality. I'd like to focus on what he said about the coronavirus and about the upcoming nationwide vote on amendments to the Russian Constitution. The vote is on July 1st, and the proposed change that for many people stands out the most, of course, is the one that would allow Putin to seek two more six-year terms as president after his current term runs out in 2024. Now, if he does serve two more terms, when the second one is over, he'll be, I think, 83 and will have been in power as president or prime minister from 1999 to 2036. I think one of Putin's comments in the show aired this weekend is interesting. He said that the proposed amendments are, quote, yet another step toward the democratization, unquote, of Russian society. Now, I think the specific context of this comment was the redistribution of some powers between president and parliament. But, you know, some analysts say that that's kind of a smokescreen. And the comment certainly seems striking nonetheless. Irina, what do you think? Is there an argument to be made that these changes would bring more democracy?
Well, Steve, first of all, let me point out that from the very beginning, Putin was and is masterful in playing with words. And the rhetoric of Kremlin remains very democratic. The problem is that those words do not mean what they should mean in democratic society. So when Putin said that this is a step towards democratization of further democratization of Russia, he meant that right now he himself appoints the prime minister, and then the prime minister appoints ministers. Now the procedure will change, and I'm pretty much sure that the amendments will be adopted. So, the vote will be positive for Mr. Putin. So now the procedure will be that it's up to the parliament, to the Russian Duma, to appoint and approve everybody, and the president cannot veto this process. Having said that, yes, it looks like it's a step towards the democratization of Russia. But Putin didn't say one particular thing, that it's all ministers but what they call the power ministers.
Mm-hmm.
So the foreign policy, the Ministry of Defense, and all the alphabetic services,
mm-hmm.
Like FSB, for example,
right.
Are still in the hands of the president. And that's what is important in the present Russian structure, where sometimes the FSB head means much more than the prime minister. Another thing that I think Putin didn't mention is that by doing this, he is not creating a more democratic structure. He's actually giving away all the responsibility for the poor economy, for example, for poor social development of Russia, to the Duma. So right now, the president is kind of outside the blame.
Right.
And if the economic situation develops as it is develops right now, the country becomes more and more poor, then, you know, people will have to blame Prime Minister and now Duma, but not the president. So it's a very convenient, you know, shift in powers, especially when the economic situation is not good, especially when the demographic situation is not good, and especially with the social problems that Russia has. So it's all very convenient for the president, and that's why probably I wouldn't put such an emphasis on democratization of Russia.
Right, and I mean, in the end, of course, if it were sort of a real functioning democracy, people are voting for the president and for the Duma, so... You know, either way, you could argue that, you know, it would be democratic. So, in a way, there's kind of other arguments undermining what he says. But that's a very interesting point. I hadn't really thought of that. The idea that he seems to be doing something that will allow him to shift the blame, and that's something, you know, we've been seeing. To potentially shift the blame. And it's something we've been seeing in terms of the coronavirus and the economic problems stemming from that, while also retaining power for the president over the power ministries, as you say, the defense ministry, FSB, and foreign ministry and others. So, you know, as you say, it does seem a convenient way to handle this. And then...
And, Steve...
Go ahead.
And if I may add, you know, there is another point that, of course, it would look more democratic if there was a normal party system in Russia. But there is no normal party system in Russia. The opposition parties do not have a chance to be in Duma except for communists. And by the way, these remarks by Putin were made in response to the criticism from communists,
mm-hmm.
Communist Party. So, but this is the only opposition party that got in there. You know, it's impossible for real liberal democrat, liberal in Russian sense, not in the U.S. sense, but you know, democratic parties to get in the parliament because of the legal system and the law on the elections that was changed and that right now doesn't allow to for the parties to get in. Plus, all the opposition parties that existed were marginalized. So,
right.
You know, it's a win-win situation. You have a pocket party, you have a pocket parliament, and you are not to be blamed for, you know, spending all the oil money on the oligarchy and friends.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a necessary context to have the idea that, you know, the Duma isn't exactly a democratically elected, you know, because of the background, as you say, of the marginalization and other things of liberal parties and just the increasing control by the Kremlin over the political system. All right. Well, thanks very much on that, Irina. Now, of course, the vote, the July 1st vote now, was postponed by more than 2 months due to the coronavirus. It had been set for April 22nd, I think. Now, all evidence suggests that the COVID-19 situation in Russia will still be quite serious when the vote is held on July 1st, just over 2 weeks from now. Russia is still recording thousands of new cases every day, often, and I think today as well, more than 8,000 new cases. Just by comparison, the Czech Republic, much smaller country, obviously, has recorded a total of about 10,000 cases, and Russia about 530 or 40,000. Russia is much bigger than the Czech Republic, about 15 times bigger by population. But the number of recorded COVID-19 cases in Russia is more than 50 times higher than in the Czech Republic. So that is a little statistic that I think says something. Of course, other countries have different numbers as well. Now, anyway, one thing that Putin said in the comments here this weekend was that Russia is, quote, working rather smoothly and emerging from the situation with the coronavirus confidently and with minimal losses, unquote. Now, Irina, the Russian service has, of course, been covering the coronavirus crisis in Russia very closely, including with detailed on-the-ground reporting. I mean, I guess the question here is similar to the question about the other issue. Based on what you've been seeing, does Putin have a solid argument for the statement that that the Russia is dealing with the crisis quite smoothly and with minimal and is coming out of it with minimal losses?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to understand Russian statistics at the moment. Even the World Health Organization says that it doesn't really understand how Russia calculates the statistics. You know, at the beginning of the coronavirus crisis, coronavirus epidemic in Russia, mm-hmm. there was one region that systematically, day by day, listed 98, 99 new infection cases. And that was Krasnodar area.
Right.
Never over 100. So the magic maximum number was 99. And that made experts, you know, ask questions on what's so magic about this figure 99 that the local authorities do not dare to jump over it in their statistics. Right now, it's the same statistics for the whole Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the figures practically do not change for the last 2 weeks. It's a little bit over 8,000, a little bit less 9,000. Sometimes it's a little bit over 9,000, but it's within this range.
Mm-hmm.
And the question, of course, whether the statistics are undercounted or whether the test that Russia has is a pretty poor test because it doesn't show COVID-positive people, or, you know, it's just the number of tests that are made per day, and, you know, that defines the outcome of 8,000 to 9,000 new infected people in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're just hiding the statistics. The more difficult case is the statistics of mortality. And that's really difficult also to understand because, you know, even during this weekend, the Rospotrebnadzor, one of the organs and control bodies in Russia,
mm-hmm.
Claimed that there was 2.5 more cases of death in Moscow in May than were listed by Moscow officials. The same happened in St. Petersburg, where the death register showed 30% more deaths in May than ever before. And it's all over the country like this. Now we see protests. The shift of coronavirus epidemics kind of went from Moscow to the provinces some time ago. And Moscow was started to be pretty good after the draconian measures of quarantine that the mayor imposed. But right now he was forced to take this off. to release people, and he's taking off all quarantine measures. Like today, they said that even the cafes and restaurants will be open. Mm-hmm. So the infection kind of shifted to the provinces, and we see, for example, demonstrations in certain parts of Russia, like Karachaevo-Cherkessia, where women went on the streets demanding proper statistics, proper care, claiming that the local hospitals are not equipped, do not know how to deal with this virus. We see that Severodvinsk, the city where Russia produces its nuclear submarines, is on quarantine right now. The city is completely locked from the rest of the world, and the military plants even were forced to give up the idea of bringing workers from outside the city. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, still very fragile situation. A lot of people are dying. Unregistered. Practically all my friends in Russia right now are saying, what exactly happened? You know, the quarantine measures were imposed when none of friends and relatives were sick. Right. And the quarantine measures are lifted when everywhere you see people getting sick, staying home, being denied medical help sometimes because Russia took this approach that if it's not critical, they are not taking people to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Only if the person is really in need of ventilators, then they would admit the person to a hospital, or if the temperature is very high for a long period of time. Otherwise, everybody just stay home. As cynical as Russians are, everybody is saying, I mean, it's all over social media, everybody is saying that because of the vote, all the quarantine measures were lifted, and we'll see what happens after it.
Right. I mean, that's very interesting detail about what's happening sort of in the streets among people and reflected on social media as well. You know, and I think analysts as well in the West and in Russia are saying, you know, it looks like Putin may have scheduled the vote for July 1st because, you know, to kind of get it over with in case things get worse with the economy, with the coronavirus later as the months pass. So, but on the other hand, if you do that, you need to, make the impression that things are going away, I guess. So, to me, Putin's remarks over the weekend, or aired over the weekend, I mean, clearly a signal that we're getting out of this. This is, you know, it's on, the COVID problem is on its way out. We've dealt with it well. So we'll see how that kind of clashes or interacts with the fact that this vote is happening in the next couple of weeks. So absolutely. All right. Thanks very much, Irina. I appreciate your comments. I think we'll wrap it up for today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
All right. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.